Are you a real estate investor looking to sharpen your skills?
Or a newbie
looking to become one? You're in the right place. Welcome to Where Should I Invest? Real Estate Investing in Canada with your host, Sarah Larby.
Hi, everybody. It's Sarah Larby here. And today we have Jen and Mike Richter, who are going to be talking about Milton, Ontario, and their experience investing in the city. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hi.
We just wanted to say we really appreciate you having us on here, and it's a great opportunity to share our story with like-minded individuals. And yeah, we're happy to be here. Thank you.
Excellent. We're excited to hear all about you and your investments. So do you want to take a few minutes to tell the listeners a little bit about yourselves?
Sure. Mike and I have been married for about 5 years, and we have a 2-year-old and a 1-year-old daughter. And despite being real estate investors now, that's actually not our background. I have a background in a master's of conservation and wildlife education.
Very nice. Pretty much
I teach people about monkeys is really what it boils down to.
And I work in the construction industry and the HVAC industry. Actually, I'm a sheet metal worker, and I work on new construction sites and install furnaces.
Excellent. So full-time and
stay-at-home mom.
Excellent. So with 2 little kids under 5.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So we have our oldest daughter's almost 3, and then we have, she is 15 months now.
Wow.
Busy.
You have your hands full. Hands full for sure.
Absolutely.
So how did you get started in real estate?
When I met Jen, I had my very first townhouse. It was my own property. And we decided to get married and buy our own property. We wanted to buy a detached house where we could raise a family. And our criteria for going out and finding our next place to live was it had to be a house that we could buy that was well within our means and gave us the ability to keep my existing townhouse to use as a rental. The last thing we wanted to do is sell that house and buy a house that was too big and have no other investments and no source of passive income to really propel ourselves into the investment industry. So we were able to keep my first townhouse. As a result of that, the market started to go up a little bit faster than we anticipated. So this built in quite a bit of equity into my first property. And what we were able to do about a year later, not even a year later, we were actually able to buy our second property with no money down.
Wow.
Right. So, you know, we didn't need a ton of money to really start this business. We just had to, you know, have disciplines, live within our means, and just have a strategy to work by. Right.
That's very good. Very strategic.
Thank you.
And Jen, I think it took a little bit of time for you to get on board initially with the real estate investing.
Oh, very, very, very much so. So Mike was saying how the first rental property was his own property. So I didn't really have a say in that. So when he said he wanted to rent his first house, I was like, well, okay, let's see how this goes. I was very, very dubious and quite against rental properties. I come from a different background. I'm very much stocks, mutual funds, a lot of the give your money to somebody else, let them take control of your money because they are the experts. However, 7 rental properties later, Mike has obviously worn me down in some cases. I'm very much a numbers person. I'm very much black and white. So Mike has all the excitement. I always say he's the engine behind this whole thing. I'm very much the brake. So he would go on and on and on about these great ideas. And I'd be like, that sounds wonderful in theory, but I definitely had to go meet with all the mortgage brokers. I had to meet with the real estate agents. I had to view the properties. I had to sit down with pen and paper, look at the numbers. And once I could see the numbers and talk to other experts to make sure that this actually was legit, nobody was fudging numbers. Nobody was just getting super excited and making up things. So I would go along with it. I realized this actually was pretty lucrative. Mm-hmm. Also, the fact that we had children may have definitely shoved me over to the dark side, we'll say. Once we had our daughters, we decided instead of buying RESPs for them, we decided to buy each daughter their own townhouse. Because we realized in the long run, this would actually appreciate a lot faster than the bonds that we would have gotten through RESPs. And this way, when the kids are older, they can take the money out. They can either use education, they can use it to buy their future house. No excuses after 18. They have to move out. They have a house. No right. Living in my basement.
That's a really unique way to look at children's education. And a lot of the financial advisors out there are not going to tell you about it. So they're very against it. A lot of them don't get paid for that kind of advice, right? They get paid to sell you the mutual funds and all of that.
Sure.
So how did you think about that? How did you come up with that idea?
I've always had a job where, you know, being a tradesman, you're really exchanging a lot of time for money. And a lot of my philosophy growing up was, yeah, I wanted to be successful, but I always equated that to doing large amounts of work, spending long hours on the site, which I really had to make money. I was coming home 6 to 8 o'clock most nights. I realized I was losing so much time that I wasn't getting to where I wanted to be in my life. And I always looked at, what do successful people do? What do people do to generate a lot of wealth? I've always sort of been gravitated towards that. So as I started to read books on this stuff and look more into it, mm-hmm. I realized that economically successful people own things. They own businesses. They have passive sources of income. And I wanted to develop a business that didn't consume all of my time the way it is now. So I found that real estate was such a good tool and such a good thing to go in that direction that I started doing that and looking at that to develop where I wanted to be, right? And I realized instead of trading my time, I could actually own an asset that would appreciate, it would give me an income, and it would actually take care of my retirement. One day I would no longer have to work and exchange my time for money. I could actually have a portfolio, which is now giving us money every single month.
Great.
So that's what we looked at.
That's very interesting. I mean, cash flow is probably the most important factor to look at.
Absolutely.
And income replacement down the road, so that you're not necessarily creating another job, but you're creating income while you sleep.
Or on holidays.
Or on holidays. Actually, you guys have a couple trips planned.
Yes. I was going to say, we are going to the Maritimes for 2 weeks at the end of August, and we're going to Portugal for the month of September.
So two kids, bunch of trips, and I think you have a few houses closing.
Yeah, one August, one September, and one November.
So you guys are going to be very busy.
Yeah,
yes,
we're literally
are.
Closing a house, waiting a couple days, going on holidays. Come back, close on a house, wait a couple days, go on holidays. This is the whole reason I'm doing real estate, so I can travel.
That's awesome. In terms of real estate, you guys are doing something a little bit different, and you're buying pre-construction. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
The reason why we buy pre-construction is because there's three things I look at. I mean, the tenant profile is very, very important to us. Low maintenance is important to us. And location and proximity to where you live is very important to us. Owning those three things gives us the ability to travel and have the lifestyle and take care of our kids and spend time together, right? So another reason why we choose new builds is because we can put down, it's about $30,000 to $40,000 that we've had to put down in the past. We can put that money down. We can wait anywhere from a year to about a year and a half for these to be built. And when we buy them, in the past, we've always bought them at about 10% under market value. So right away, we're putting, you know, $40,000 down, and we're immediately making about $40,000. That's what it's been in cash, in equity, immediately, right? So once we wait until those come to fruition, we've got now a brand new property. We've got a great tenant profile, and it's basically a turnkey property. We don't have to do any work to it. We don't have to do a ton of maintenance and chase people for rent. And it works very, very well for our lifestyle. And that's why we really decided to go with new build.
New builds also helped me get on the rental bandwagon, we'll say. Initially, new builds were a lot of work for me because you'd get these big builders. They send out blast emails saying, okay, come now to come stand in line to get your purchase and ticket. So a lot of the times I'd get these frantic phone calls from Mike, or I'd get my email and they'd be like, you have to go this second. So I'd literally be like turning dinner off in the oven, throwing the kids in the car seat, driving frantically to somewhere in Milton, and then literally grabbing a kid on the hip, grabbing the baby bucket and running through the parking lot. P.S. I outrun most people, even with two children and one in a baby bucket. They did not want it as bad as I did. But because we were so aggressive and so pick up and go, we were just ready for every second. We were always able to get a really good ticket number, which allowed us to buy the houses that we wanted, because that's the initial hard part. But then after that, because they're new builds, Mike works full time and I'm a stay at home mom. So I know realistically, I'm the one going to get the phone calls. I'm going to be the one dealing with the tenants. So I didn't want to have to deal with the trades. I didn't want to go deal with a different clientele, because I will be bringing my babies half the time to these meetings, but also I'm not going to Home Depot every weekend to replace toilets and things like that. So for me, when Mike's like, hey, we can have this property and it doesn't take any more of your time, I'm like, well, that's a pretty convincing argument. date.
Absolutely. So you mentioned tickets. There's probably a few people that are wondering how that process works.
Yes.
When there's an announcement, like you don't even know usually the day of that they're going to be announcing, and that's going to be the day that you wait in line. Is that correct?
Yeah. So what happens is you go on the builder's website, you sign up, and they'll do a couple initial emails, be like, hey, something's coming soon. Something's coming soon. We're very eager. So we typically will drive around the sales center because all of a sudden one day they'll have a lot of signs leaning up against their building. They'll have like pillars and tents leaning up against the building. So that's our kind of key. Be like, hey, we should stay home this weekend just in case. So what they do is Thursday at 2 o'clock, we'll say they send a blast email to everybody on their mailing list that say, hey, if you would like one of these houses, please come to Milton Public Library right now. So everybody rushes. It's a first come, first serve basis. You get in line for a townhouse or you get in line for a detached. You're given numbers and you purchase your home based on your number. However, they do release a very limited amount of houses and models. And that really can affect our prices because sometimes we may want a certain model because it's in our price range, but that could be also sold out by ticket number two.
Mm-hmm. So it's very important when you go into one of these lines, you usually have to make these decisions. And the decision-making process got tighter and tighter as we bought different properties because there's just an overwhelming amount of buyers.
You're purchasing the next day.
You're purchasing the next day. You literally go in, they give you the information and they say, get on the bus. We're going to the sales office. You meet at an adjacent location. And you're making your decision in a matter of minutes, not even
on a bus ride.
On a bus. Yeah. So what we did the night before is we had plan A, B, C, D. We'd, you know, change elevations, change model types, and we'd have strike prices. You'd have price points where we would work very, very closely with an agent that we trusted. And we'd say, okay, this is the most we can get for rent and predict what it would be come closing. So we really had to look at our numbers and say, this is the most we can spend on this model. And then this is the most we can spend on this model. And we basically have what we wanted, but then we'd have contingency plans. And that's very, very good to be organized to make those decisions so you're not getting stressed out and maybe giving up that spot in line, which you might not get that opportunity for a very long time where we were.
It's a lot of pressure.
It's very, very high pressure.
Sounds like it. You've got to be ready right away. You need to have, I'm assuming, at least some type of down payment ready to go.
Yeah.
What does that look like?
Well, the deposit, it's anywhere from $30,000 to $40,000, and it's getting more expensive.
Total. The signing day, though, usually they ask for $10,000 up front.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have a monthly payment for over a three-month period after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the down payments are anywhere. I mean, you're looking for a rental. It's 20% down, right? But that doesn't mean that you need the full 20% down. If you work with a very, very good broker or someone who's, you know, seasoned and does real estate investing, there's other ways we've looked at it where we've never had really the full amounts of money because we're always expanding. So what we'd do is we'd take lines of credit from another property or you'd use your personal line of credit. Money to me is just a resource. It's just a tool. I don't look at it and say, well, I don't have enough, throw my hands up and say, I'll have to wait a year or, you know, my goal is to pay down my mortgage. No, I look at it as if I don't have it, that's a resource. How do I get it? I always ask myself how. And if you're determined enough, you'll get that money to go in and buy what you want, right?
Absolutely. That's a great point. And I will second that. Now, these builders, I think it's, you said Mattamy. So Mattamy, but the other people might have different ways of doing things, or is it pretty straightforward in the same process?
It depends on how big the builder is. Mattamy is one of the main ones in Milton. So that's the one we have done our majority of work with because they're one of the largest. They set the rules and people say, yes, sir. So they changed it sometimes. Like they've increased their deposits. They've increased their prices. They change stuff. Some of the smaller builders, they just do soft releases. So they just kind of like put out billboards around this area. They can send you an email saying come 11 o'clock on Saturday, they'll be releasing. But I've never seen these huge, huge rushes like Mattamy's had where it's a 2-day buying process.
Yeah. There's been some builders, Mattamy used to be like this too. They don't do this anymore because it just got too out of control, but they would let people know a week in advance. And some builders still do that. And there'd be literally people camping out there for a week and sleeping in their cars. And I bought my very first house. It was 10 years ago. I slept in my car for two nights because I wanted that specific spot in line and that specific location more because I was living there and it was an emotional decision. It wasn't driven so much by numbers. It was emotional. I wanted a very specific lot number. So I stayed in line. That was worth it to me. But different builders have different ways of doing things. So sometimes, yeah, you know what? If it's worth it to you and the prices are right, yeah, you might have to stay there for a couple of nights, but then you get the product that you want. You've got a brand new build and you're on a roll.
And you guys have 7 so far?
Yes, we do.
Yeah, that's excellent. And so, what time frame is that? How long have you been investing for now?
Okay, so my first property in September, that'll be 4 years that we actually signed our first lease in my very own first townhouse. But from the time we actually bought our first purpose-built rental, it would have been in January 2014 that we bought that. And we had a very, very quick turnaround. So we closed on that 6 months later. And that property we've done very, very, very well on.
So right now we have 5 rental properties in Milton, and we have 2 in Southern Guelph that are going to close in the spring 2018.
Excellent. Have you had many delays so far with the closings?
That's all we have, are delays. That is a good thing to know about if you're buying brand new. Just assume it's going to be delayed. We have like decided that from the get-go, especially working with certain builders, they always delay you. So if they say they're closing June, always assume 3 months after, do all of your numbers 3 months after, do your rent prices, everything production 3 months after. That usually puts you in a good safe net because they have unrealistic building schedules and they try to push people too hard. So always assume delays.
That can be a challenge too, because if you have a very fast turnaround, you know, we're about to lock in a mortgage to be within 120 days. And all of a sudden we get a notice a matter of months ago that says you guys are getting pushed past that into November. Hence, you no longer get the rate that we locked in several months ago. So that can be a challenge too, with interest rates going upwards. And it can also be a challenge in the sense that if you have a schedule and you maybe want to buy a resale and close on it, you may need to close in your new build before you can acquire a new title, right? So it can really be a challenge. So you have to look out for that with new builds. On a resale, you can basically name your date, you can agree on that, and it's closing because there's nothing, there's no foundations, there's no roofs, there's no weather permitting, there's no conservation authority getting involved. It's a lot different from buying a resale. You just have to know those challenges.
Yep, makes sense. Now, are you planning on holding these for every single property that you have once they close? You're going to have it tenanted?
Yeah, so our entire portfolio is based on the buy and hold strategy. It's a little different than I think the other investors in Milton. Mm-hmm.
A lot of investors tend to go for cash flow. Like investors, what they'll typically do in Milton, you've got 2 main categories. You've got sort of the mom and pop who started the way I did. You know, they convert their personal residence into a rental. There's a lot of those. And then big investors typically only want to go for the apartment buildings, which there aren't a lot in Milton. There's not a lot of high-rise apartment, but not a lot of people are interested in what we're doing right now.
Why?
Yeah, a lot of people right now, what's happening with these buildings is that with the government putting regulations on the rents, they're not keeping up with repairs that are going on in these houses. Property taxes are rising, insurance is rising. So what's happening with a lot of these homes is that landlords are taking profits in the recent swing we've had in prices. We've had tremendous gains in Milton. A lot of landlords are cashing out on this. So what happens is we're having more vacancies, and there's virtually zero vacancy in Milton right now. So you do have a lot of landlords getting out, and it's very, very difficult for new landlords to get in because the prices are so high and there's just so much competition to get in that it's very, very difficult for anybody new to get into the market. But that's also what that's done is it's subsequently pushed our rent value up completely. Like if you look at one of our properties from a year, the lease is about to end at the beginning of August next month. And what's happening is our lease has gone up about 9% in the last 3 years. That's the cost of the lease. So we're literally putting it up $325 from last year to this year. The rents will be around $2,100.
We find in Milton that because there's literally no vacancy rate and all of the investors are cashing out within usually 2 to 3 years, we're finding that there's bidding wars for our properties, for rental properties.
That's interesting because you don't get that in Brantford as an example. Like you will get tenants that are interested, but bidding wars in the sense that they're offering more.
Yeah, people are offering typically anywhere from about $25 to $50 more a month. People are so desperate to get into Milton for a few reasons, but a lot of people really want Milton and they're willing to pay for it. And considering a lot of our, well, all of our properties are brand new, a law that attracts a lot of people too. And people are willing to pay a premium price for being the only person or second person to live in a property.
So let's talk about the price. So on average, like out of your five that you have in Milton, what's the average price that you purchased and what's the average rent? And then if somebody were to go in now, what would that look like?
Okay, so the very first one, when we bought our very first property back in January of 2014, we paid $370,000 for that.
Now, it's a two-story,
three-bedroom townhouse, okay?
Wow.
So if you're looking at the same property today, I mean, there's no new builds available right now, but a resale on that, that was as high as, I saw that on the resale market for $680,000. And now that's down around 640. There's been a bit of a mild correction in Milton, right? not by much. So there's been the most we paid. It was back in April 2016. We paid 490, and that was our cutoff point, because after that, you're going to run into negative territory in cash flow. So that was the most we were willing to pay. And that was basically the end of what we're going to continue doing strategy in Milton. Hence, we brought our strategy to Guelph. So,
and rent-wise,
yes,
that property was originally 3 years rented ago for $1,600 a month. Now it's renting for $2,100 a month.
A big increase
in 3 years. Yeah,
and there's likely going to be bidding wars for this. I was looking at the absorption rate on a lot of these properties, and if there's not a bidding war, they're on there for no more than a week on the market. They're getting snatched up right away. There's virtually no vacancy in Milton, and one of the reasons for that is because, you know, I was running the numbers for an average family to get in and buy a house for, remember, we have townhouses and, you know, these are entry level homes. So to take on a mortgage, I mean, for, you know, $640,000, you're looking at, you know, with 5% down, you're looking at about $40,000 to $45,000 down with closing costs and land transfer tax. And then, and your mortgage running that at 3% would be, and property tax would be close to $3,000 a month. So a lot of people will look at that and say, well, hey, if we can rent, and a lot of people are banking on a correction, which I don't see happening, but if you can rent for $2,100, I think you'll have a lot more of a lifestyle.
Absolutely.
Than someone who's paying almost $3,000 a month to have a mortgage on that.
It's probably hard right now for somebody to get into the pre-construction market.
I'd say in Milton, it's pretty much impossible right now. Milton has really outpriced itself if you're looking at new builds specifically. That's why we started looking at Southern Guelph. That's a lot more realistic for numbers and cash flow. There are some stuff. If you are able to get a resale in Milton, some of the older parts of Milton, you could definitely find something. A lot of it is you're probably going to have to find a private deal, though.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then so when you're saying something that needs a little bit of work, is it like some light renos and just buying it under value? Is that where the opportunity might be?
So when I say our strategy doesn't work, that doesn't by any means mean that nobody can come in and invest. I always say, you know, if people say is Milton or is what you do, is it a good area to invest in? I would say, well, it depends. What's your skill set? What's your skill level? What's your desired outcome? And what do you want to gain from your whole experience? You know, like, I mean, we don't want the time to put in. We've got kids. We've got a very unique situation, but for someone who's handy, for someone who wants to get into a property, there's a lot of properties in older Milton that need a lot of work. I mean, I've seen properties that have, you know, still, they've been built back in the 60s and 70s, and they've still got original kitchens, original bathrooms, and they're total gut jobs. And they're in areas where you basically have an ugly house in an up and coming area. So you could get into that, mainly do surface areas and really buy, fix and flip and really force the value up in that area and make, you know, a good profit, whether you put renters into there or you make short-term money on a flip, there's still opportunities in there. And if you speak with a good agent and meet with a good agent and other investors, there's a lot of off-market deals that we've been hearing about now because we're putting our names out there. We're telling people about what we do. So if, you know, if you're looking in this, don't always go the conventional route of saying, you know, there's no good deals in MLS, there's no builders releasing. Go out there and
Hit the pavement.
You know, even if you have to knock on doors, or a lot of it's just people that know us. Now that people know what we do, we have a lot of people saying, hey, my agent, he's got contacts with private landlords, or hey, my mom's selling her house. Do you want to take a look at it? And we're getting different leads because people know what we do. So we can hit it before it even goes on the market, and we get multiple offers coming in, which Milton's typically known for. So there's a lot of potential out there if you're willing to get out there and hit the pavement.
I think that's a method that's underutilized. I mean, even just knocking on the doors of the houses that look older and just talking to the owner and seeing if you can do something. There's so many deals that exchange hands without even hitting MLS. So it is really smart that you guys are taking that initiative to do something different, because if you don't get the cash flow a certain way, well, there's still other opportunities, or maybe there's a way to create more value and force appreciation on those properties that need more work. So I wanted to talk a little bit more about Milton and just what the fundamentals are of that region. And I know that you guys are both very, very well versed. You live there, you invest there. What can you tell our listeners about the city and why people would want to look into Milton closer?
I mean, I'll be honest, when I was younger, the population was 34,000 people up until, you know, the late 90s, right? And it was always known as like the farm community. I would go to meet friends in Mississauga and I'd be kind of embarrassed that I lived in Milton, but you know, here we are, you know, almost 20 years later and it's totally different. I'm proud to say that, you know, I'm from Milton. So Milton, I find it's got, because of the intensified development that's been going on, it's really made it encouraging for a lot of new developers to come in and put not even so much residential development, but we have a ton of commercial development going on right now. And we've got a lot of amenities that are coming in because commercial developers are looking at this and saying, hey, you know what? We can put in restaurants and sports centers and
schools
and block stores. Yeah, we can do all of this because we have that guaranteed business. We have the flow through because the population is growing. There's money coming into the city. So it's becoming more and more vibrant. And Milton, I mean, just sitting down and talking with some of the counselors, it was they're really pro-growth. They really want to grow and they really want to cater to what Milton wants and what the people want. It's an excellent area in the sense that because there's so much development, you have very, very low property tax. We're very, very strategically located between the 401 and the 407. So Milton is more of a bedroom community. It's not so much of a community where people live and work, even though Milton does want to cater towards more professionals. So what a lot of people do, they live in Milton and they commute. And in a 40-minute radius, I can hit the Tri-Cities, I can hit Hamilton, I can hit Vaughan, I can hit downtown Toronto. In a 1 hour radius for my own job, I can hit virtually every city inside the GTA and the outer GTA. So it's strategically located and it's a great city. You know, there's a lot of passionate people here. There's great people. It's still that small town feeling where people know each other. And it's a really good vibe being in Milton.
That's great to hear. Now for the transportation piece, there's a GO Bus.
Yeah, so there's a GO Bus and a GO Train, and they're putting in two new stations. We've just been approved in Milton for two new stations. So you have all the people coming from Kitchener, Cambridge, Guelph, Waterloo. So you have people coming from there, and what they're doing is they're putting, on the west end, they're putting a station to relieve some of the traffic from that area. And then we've got our main station downtown Milton, and then there's also a station going in the north end of Milton to take even more commuters with all the growth. So they've put an amazing bus system in. So if you don't want to drive, if you don't want to own a car, there's a very, very good bus system that's been put in before the population is really intensified to encourage people to not buy cars and take public transit. And this public transit can take you right to the GO station. So you don't have to worry about driving and taking your car. You can just hop on the GO train and head right downtown in 25 minutes.
That's very convenient. Mm-hmm. So your tenants that are renting from you, are they driving? Are they taking the public transportations?
Well, one of our tenants, she works right in town in one of the new business development areas, right? It's great for her. It's a 10-minute drive and she's very, very happy where she lives. So it's very, very convenient. That's why they bought in Milton. They also love the town. Our other tenants, yeah, they have to commute, but
that's the town. Everybody
that's the town. That's just how it is. But they're going in different directions and they're not driving very far because of where we're located.
I think another good thing, and you guys will be able to confirm that, but the income from renters, tenants in Milton could be a lot higher than others, for example, in St. Catharines or Hamilton. Mm-hmm. Do you have an average income estimate?
The income is about $106,000 for the average family coming in. And the reason for that I find too is because adults that are in the age bracket of between 25 and 64, 75 of them have a post-secondary degree or university degree.
Well-educated people.
There are well-educated people, and that's...
And usually both are working. You have two working adults in the family.
And that's a profile that we like because, once again, we want to deal with AAA tenants. We want to deal with professionals, right? And that's our target. And that really helps us. And we've been able to relate to these people and form very good relationships because of that.
Now, what about school zones? That's probably important to you as well with two kids.
Yeah, school zones, they are definitely catching up with the schools in Milton. Every year, the school zones change a bit because we're building so many new properties. Right. But that's why we like the new area of Milton. New area of Milton, like Mike was saying, a lot of the commercial is tending to be driven towards the new Milton, which we'll say is like Louis Saint Laurent, Bronte kind of area. But a lot of the school districts is going out that way. So by our properties, there's always like elementary school and a high school, both public, both Catholic schools are being put in. So they're doing a huge rush for all of these schools, which we really love the idea because we have kids coming up. It does affect borders over parents, though, because it does change sometimes. But they're desperately trying to keep up with Milton's a huge family town. Mm-hmm. A lot of young families want to move to Milton. So they really see the need for schools and they're really, really amping it up.
Are there any areas that investors should avoid or not invest in?
No, you know what? Crime in Milton is very, very, very low. I mean, I've lived here my whole life. There's not even an area where I wouldn't recommend Jen goes with her kids or single woman goes. I mean, I've always felt safe anywhere in Milton. I guess the worst areas are really the areas, like I was describing earlier, that are just run down, where it's original owners, where it's just really a problem of beautifying the area, right? Where people just sort of, the owners are tired, and that's really the only problem when it comes to looking for a place to live. Mm-hmm. You never want to have the best house in a rundown area, and that's really the only problem I would try to avoid if I was buying.
That makes sense. It's pretty typical to any investment town. You never want the best house in the worst neighborhood.
No.
It should be the worst house in the best neighborhood,
absolutely.
If anything, right?
Yeah.
So that's good. And then what about if somebody wanted to do like a basement conversion? Like, are those something that exists in the city? Is that happening? Or
yes, they are. And Milton is very, very pro-development when it comes to that, because when it comes to their target and their growth targets, they need... and that has to do with intensification. They've actually offered, well, Jen, you saw that.
Yeah.
They offer rebates for a
while. The town was offering, if you were converting your basement into a legal basement apartment.
That's an important word.
Legal. The town was willing to reimburse you up to 75% of your reno budget.
It's amazing.
You had to apply for it. Apparently, many, many, many people took advantage of it and applied. So the town has stopped this program right now because too many people were applying for it. I hope a lot of those people were taking their legal basement apartments and now renting them instead of putting grandma in the basement.
Right.
But that was not a condition, unfortunately, Milton had made.
Okay.
That was the clincher. But even then, basement apartment rents are doing really, really well. We talked to her agent. He says they're going anywhere from $1,100 to $1,200 for a basement apartment in Milton.
Now, are utilities usually included when you have a duplex, or is it split?
If it's a legal basement apartment, they are included typically. If you look at any other like towns, detached rentals in Milton, utilities are not included.
Mm-hmm. That's good. You don't want to be on the hook for hydro increases and them.
I'm not paying for people's
putting
in.
I mean, people do that very short term. Yeah. I've seen ads for that typically. So if we're charging 21, they'll typically throw, I'd say maybe a 20% premium on top of that to cover any outstanding bills, but it's not for a long period of time. It's maybe if someone has a property and it's less than a year lease, someone wants to just come in and have a turnkey solution. They don't want to go through changing all the bills and it's not a 1 year. They'll throw a tenant in there and do that. And that works out in that sense, right? You get some money coming in. It's not sitting vacant. So that's where I've seen that.
Do you see a demand for any short-term furnished type of rentals?
I've only seen one on Kijiji where somebody was looking for one, but they were only looking for a 3-month period. So for me, it wasn't really worth renting for 3 months fully furnished to get all the furniture in, get it out in a 3-month period. But typically people want to come to live in Milton and stay in Milton for a good period of time.
Yeah. Our second rental actually that we bought back in January of 2014, that unit, we actually leased that to a company and they had engineers coming in from Italy. And that would have been a good opportunity because they actually did have a company come in and offer a total outfitted house. They basically provided them with everything they needed. And that would have been an opportunity to say, hey, you know what, we can provide that for you. here's what we can offer. So there are opportunities for that because we do have industry in the outskirts of towns where we do need professionals to come in, and they don't necessarily come to Canada, or they come from other areas and they don't want to bring a whole moving truck with them. So,
right. Now, are there post-secondary schools?
So right now what they're doing, the University of Laurier has really spearheaded this whole program. And right now they're just in a stage where they're offering different letters of recommendation from different universities to see what they can offer. So it's not a go with exactly a time frame or who's coming in, but we have been approved. And that was for many years, the town of Milton and the region were waiting for the official go ahead from the government. And now we've gotten that. And what's interesting is that all of our properties, we knew about this for a long time, they're all within a 1 mile radius of this proposed university. So what I see happening is that we're not interested in renting our properties to students. It's not that type of property, but there will be a very, very high demand for rent. And we can really see the values.
The students will dry up.
The students will dry up. And then you have faculty and other professionals that we can rent to. So,
yeah, that's a great thing. So even for me, where I invest in Brantford with Laurier coming in as well, it dried up a lot of the 4-5 bedroom houses. So the bigger families were, you know, willing to pay more for those types of properties. And there was a lot less supply and higher demand. So I think you guys are going to be in a great, great spot once that happens.
It's like we mentioned, with people leaving the market and a lot of people needing to rent, I mean, it's the law of supply and demand. Prices typically get driven up. So for us, we weren't banking on that, but that's just intrinsic value when that does eventually happen for us.
Absolutely. So what's your guys' goal with your properties in Milton? To hang on to them for X amount of years, retire with them?
We plan on holding them indefinitely. I mean, you know, things change. I mean, roofs go, countertops go, surface areas go, but that's all replaceable. We're looking at this long-term. We don't have any near future plans to sell. You can access cash out of properties without selling the property. What we'll simply do is refinance as the rents are going up and supporting a higher debt load. We'll refinance and take that money and use it for other projects and other strategies.
Like I said, we're keeping these houses for the girls, RESP. So we want to at least keep two of them long-term until they're at least 18 and going to school, because we'll need to, like Mike said, either pull out the equity. If we had to, worst case scenario, we had to sell them, we have that option.
And the way we bought these, it was also for exit strategy too. These are new builds and there's a big desirability. Well, right now, because they're so new, for new builds. I mean, these are townhouses. So these are entry level products. So there's always the demand in any market for your entry level. It might not be the price you want, but we're always able to liquidate these. And that's one of the reasons why we bought them as an exit strategy too.
That's a great strategy. So what about your next 10 years? Are you going to be looking in wealth? Are you going to be buying some multifamilies? What's the plan?
Okay, so the plan for us right now, we've got a goal and we're nailing down all the details of it, but I'm 34 right now and I want to retire by the time I'm 39 and pursue this full time and put all of my energy and my time into this. So what we want to do right now, if you look at our portfolio, we've got a lot of equity built into these properties, but the cash flow, well, it has gone up, but it's not what we need to replace my income. So what we want to do is we want to transition into properties that offer, we want to start looking at multiple doors, we want higher cap rates, we want a higher net operating income that will subsequently replace my income as that starts to get higher and higher and higher, and I can transition slowly out of my job. Because, I mean, I find with my job right now, I am putting in a lot of time. It is physically demanding. It's great on the income side to pay for, my income pays for my family. It pays for the deposits for these properties. But I'm not building any equity in my job. I don't own the business. I don't work on my own houses. So it's not really something I want to do for the rest of my life. But it does offer a very good residual income every day that I do go to work. So we want to transition from my job into this business full time, which means we're looking for different opportunities. Like our next step right now is to look at anywhere from a 3 to a 4plex. And we've been looking, scouting out different areas. Like, you know, we bought a few. We love the fundamentals of Guelph. We like what Hamilton's doing right now. We look at where you are, Bradford's doing right now. There's different areas that offer different values where the land is a little bit cheaper, but the prices are nowhere near as high as what we're doing.
And I have my own little project too. Like I said, Mike has always been the excitement and passion behind the real estate investing. I personally would like to get a multiplex, at least 6 doors, anywhere from 6 to 10 doors is kind of my personal project. I feel I need to do something that excites me in the real estate, that it can be my own little thing. That's not always Mike driving it or Mike saying like, yeah, we have to do this. We have to go here. We need to go look at this. I need my own like pet project per se. And so I've been looking at a lot of the multiplexes that are around 6 to 10 doors.
That's great. And you've been really busy too. You've created a website for your business.
That is my third child. I think my kids let me sleep more than making the website has. Yeah, so we have a new website. Our business is called Double E Properties. And our website is doubleeproperties.ca. And that has been my new project, my new baby. It's been really exciting. I think it offers something different for our clients. Like Mike was saying, we do get a lot of word of mouth. So when people are saying, do you have anything for rent? Instead of sitting there and trying to verbally describe the building or sit on your phone and try to like flip through pictures. This way we have somewhere to send our clients or potential tenants or potential investors. So they can actually see what our products look like, our color schemes, our layouts. I think that sells people a lot more. All our houses have been professionally designed by interior designers. So I think that shows wow. a lot better than me trying to say, they're really nice countertops. They're really pretty.
So do you have a whole set of, you mentioned colors, you know, you use the same paint on all of them to
really We typically do. Yes, it does make life a little easier. We had the interior designers go through the design center with us. So they were able to separate us from the design process. It's hard to go in and sometimes step away because I love this countertop or I love this mix of colors. Sometimes you have to step back and say, what is the general population like? Or what is a color scheme that's going to last the next 5, 10, 15 years? We don't want anything too trendy. So in 5 years, people look at it and go, oh my gosh, that's going to be a lot of cleaning. So we definitely hire experts to help guide us and take our opinions out of it.
Mm-hmm. And it's good for people to see really what we do through a website and business cards. And I mean, I think that's one of the first, maybe not the first step, but as you start to scale your portfolio, you want people to know what you do. You want to show them that it's a business. So when you present someone with a business card, right, and you say, hey, go, here's my website, and they see a website, they see email, that looks a lot more professional than just trying to describe what you do and tell someone, hey, I got a couple of properties. So I found right away people react differently to you. And we've even gotten a lot more feedback just because of our website. I can actually tell people about what we do without sounding like, hey, I got all these properties. It's like, well, here's my card. Here's what I do. If you're more interested, take a look at this. And that really helps us brand ourselves a little bit differently from just sort of the average investors who are getting in this. Like most people just trying to own a couple of properties.
We're trying to stand out from being a mom and pop business because that's not what we want to be. This is permanent. This is our long-term goal. This is going to be replacing our incomes. We want to stand out. We have to brand the image of Double E Properties.
You're really creating a business that people will be able to reference and you're building that brand, which is great. You also mentioned an interior designer. I'm guessing you guys have a team of other experts that help you. Do you want to go through that a little bit and tell our listeners what you think would be some of the key players to have on a team?
Okay, so if I look at when we started this business to now,
learn from our mistakes.
We got into this thinking, well, a real estate agent, great. I mean, they can do everything. You know, an accountant, great. They've done my income tax and, you know, we use my mom's friend or somebody on the corner. It's just basic referrals from average people. Just because somebody has a title behind their name doesn't mean by any means that they're an expert in the real estate industry or in the business industry, or they have the capability of dealing with multiple properties. So there's a lot of growing pains when we started this because we're using one agent that typically wasn't qualified with leases. I mean, he only did resale and he only represented clients for buying properties for themselves. Even the accountant had asked the accountant questions and it was inaccurate information and they weren't really even passionate about trying to help me build a real estate business. And I realized that, you know what, if I'm going to do this and actually succeed, I've got to pull the team together. So one of the things that really helped me, a lot of us, you know, I've asked, okay, where do I find these people? And I found the best source for us was networking, going to network events. Like we're RAIN members and we're also members of SoRight. And going there, you'd meet all kinds of great people who are already doing either what you want to do, or they've done a lot more than what you want to do. And you see, I'd ask them, okay, who's your accountant? Who's your real estate agent? What do you do? And then you'd have a lot of these professionals actually presenting at these clubs, and you'd see their advertisements, and you'd get to find out a lot about true players and what they did and why they were in real estate because they were presenting. So I can't stress anymore, you have to really have the right accountant that's
who specializes
in corporations. Now we're moving all of our properties. That's the next step into the corporate structure. So there's a lot of moving parts in that. You have to have the right professionals. The average agent doesn't typically always understand the language of investing. I mean, Robert Kiyosaki always says, know the language, know your words, like know your real estate vocabulary. So you need an agent to be able to go in there and fight on your part in your behalf and know the terminology to be able to negotiate the best deal for you. And you also need an agent that's very, very market specific to your individual niche of the market or your market. If you just get someone that says, well, I represent Toronto or the West End of Toronto, no, that's not good enough. You need an agent who actually knows the ins and outs, who's going to negotiate and get you the best rent and actually be able to back up their numbers, right? Mortgage brokers do. You know what? Had I found the right mortgage broker from the beginning, we'd probably have almost double what we do now because
they set you up for success much earlier. They see the bigger picture. If you go to one of the major banks, they're very limiting. They expect you to buy one, and then they blatantly tell you, stop buying properties, which is not an option for us. So we needed somebody at the beginning who had a much broader picture to be, okay, you're here. You want to be here. This is how we're going to get you there.
And they give you an actual strategy because that's all they do. They work with big investors and they've seen it and they've got the experience versus just the person at the bank where we got our first mortgages, who were just basically, we call the bank and say, well, our conversation would be like, okay, well, what's your cheapest 5-year rate? And that's the first thing I'd say. And that, you know what, that turned off a lot of these bankers because it made it look like I was price shopping. Now I'll interview someone, have a conversation with a broker for about an hour. And the last thing really we talk about is the rate, because there's so many more components to what they can offer me in my situation and their customer service that come before simply just price, right? So yeah, really find people who are specialists and experts in the area that you want to be in and who have already been where you want to go.
That is so important. And I've made very, very similar mistakes to you guys as well. And we started at TD Bank. Like you said, if you get one, it's not a big deal. And then if you get two, they ask for 25% down. And then we were going for a third one and they tried to get 35% down. And we said, well, this doesn't sound right.
You're running the capital pretty quickly.
You will. So it is so important to work with the right team of experts. They should also be investors themselves. It's very, absolutely, you know, if you're going to work with a realtor and they're going to be market specific, great. You don't want somebody that has not invested to run numbers for you. That's definitely one of the biggest pieces of advice. I've made the same mistake originally with using a realtor that was not local, then that was not investor specific and was not an investor. And it really is a night and day difference in the kind of growth that you can have and not being the smartest on your team. Like, you want your team of experts to be much smarter than you and to guide you and to teach you and so that you can grow properly.
No, I agree. And one of the things that you'll have to realize, these experts don't necessarily always deal. I mean, you're going to have to face rejection. I mean, going into this when I was younger, it's like I said, my first conversation topic is, well, how cheap you can do it for, because that's really all I knew. And I didn't have a lot of clarity. Like, I'd call agents and say, well, I'm looking for a good deal. Well, I mean, you know, they're typically going to either bring deals that favor them or they're really not going to take you seriously. So I find the more clarity you can have, the more structured your goals are, and the more you know about what outcome you want, and the more specific you can be, the more serious they're going to take you, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're very, very focused on what you want, say, this is where I want, this is where I want to begin, and you're not haggling over prices from the beginning, you're really gonna get experts to take you a lot more seriously because you have to bring them value too. They don't wanna waste a lot of time with you if you're just sort of dabbling and you don't know what direction you wanna go in. So we're very, very specific and we don't like to waste people's time. We go in, we tell them what we're looking for, and right away their attitudes have completely changed when working with us because we have a lot of value that we can bring them to, not only now, but in the future. And they see that.
Yeah, working with investors, it's that ongoing cash and money and paycheck for them because you're, and we are returning customers over and over.
Exactly. Of course. And they see that.
So what about your lawyer being in new construction? Do you have a specific lawyer that deals with just new construction or real estate in general?
So I've dealt with a lawyer that's very, very good. He's a veteran lawyer and he's very, very good at doing new builds and transactional real estate purchases. And we've used him for a very long time and our family knows him too. So he's gotten into a lot more specific and given me a lot more information to help me learn about all the legal clauses and the ins and outs from a legal perspective. But now that we're moving more towards a corporate structure, we're actually going to go with a lawyer that has a very good relationship with our accountant that
it's a different skill set.
He's got a totally different skill set.
Our current lawyer is in Milton. Mm-hmm. So he gets a lot of the Mattamy contracts across his desk. So he's very, very versed in the Mattamy new bill contracts. So for him, he's been fantastic for that. However, now incorporating, it's a different game.
We want to make sure, because the whole idea of a corporation is to harbor some of your taxes and it's somewhat of a tax haven, but also it's a legal entity. If we get sued, I mean, you don't want to take shortcuts at that. That's the one thing that's going to separate our rental properties from our own personal assets and ultimately affect our livelihood. So we want to make sure that we have the very, very best lawyer set up that has a direct relationship with the accountant so they can both formulate the best tax strategy and legal entity that works for our specific situation.
And that's how you really tie it in and make it a true business as well, by not overlooking these little things. You know, it might cost a little bit more to incorporate, but if it makes sense for you guys,
it's an investment in your business.
Exactly.
It does. Don't look at it from the mindset as, wow, it costs a lot of money up front, which it does. Look at it as, what'll this bring me down the road? And what can I gain from this? And where do I want to end up? And yeah, you will have to put up the money in the beginning, but in the big picture, it will be very, very lucrative to have a setup the way we're doing it.
Well, I always joke, how much did I spend on 6 years of university education?
Right.
And where did that get me? I go to Africa once a year. Yeah, yeah. I have babies, but I don't mind paying good money for good service. That's going to get me a heck of a lot further than my 6 years of university did.
Absolutely. And this is not information and knowledge that they share with you in school. Unfortunately,
they should. That's why we take our girls with us to all the events and to houses, because they need to see this. They need to know that there's different options out there for them. It's not a save all your money in your piggy bank from your little. They're going to be investing once they start making allowance. They will be learning how to earn money and what to do with that money.
So typically in school, they always taught us how to be a good employee, how to work long hours, how to work hard for the economy, how to be a professional and get an education to be a worker. They didn't teach me in school how to actually build and grow a business and create a value that people will pay you money for, where it allows you to live a lifestyle that you've always dreamed about, which we're transitioning into now, right? With our traveling. It never taught me that in school. So this is a totally different shift in mindset that school is going to teach you. This is about finding a niche in the market. It's not so much about pursuing, you know, in school they always said, do what you love, do what you're passionate about. Okay, well, what do I do with that if it doesn't actually solve a problem in the economy? So we're looking at, what's the demand? There's a lot of renters. What do they like? What do they want? What problems can we solve? How can we add value to an economy in exchange for an income? And that's how we look at this whole situation, through the eyes of a business, not just the eyes of, how can I go to work and chase a paycheck every week? Right?
Well, it's like working in Africa makes me very, very little money. Mm-hmm. However, doing real estate makes me enough money that I can go back to Africa for 4 months and volunteer my time and energy there.
It's those ideas and that mindset and the education that I think just all in Canada in general and many other countries, we're not doing any kids justice by forgoing that whole portion of education, which I think is probably more important than everything else
it's
that
life.
They're learning. Yeah, that is life.
It is, you know, and it's like I go to my job and it's okay. I like what I do, but real estate, I mean, I'm very, very passionate about it. Not so much because of the bricks and the mortar I've really even come to realize. It's or not so much about what happens. You got to remember, in our business, they say it's big paydays with long delays. I mean, the real money, let's face it, comes out eventually when you liquidate these properties down the road and sell them, right? And there's cash flow in between. But it's really about a lifestyle. It's really a tool. It's a vehicle that we're using to realize the lifestyle of our dreams. I remember Oprah Winfrey was once saying, one of the true adventures in life, the biggest adventure, is when you actually get to live your dreams. And every day that we do this, I mean, I know that yeah, we're not making a lot of money right now because we're starting, but I know that the direction we're going in with the pace that we're acquiring properties, we will get to live that lifestyle. I will get to see my girls every day. I will get to spend time with my wife, and I'm not exhausted from going to my day job and being in the rat race every day. And the legacy I want to leave behind is you can do more with your life. You can do what you truly like. We want to teach our daughters, you can truly do what you love in life if you can provide a tool, a vehicle that brings you an income where you no longer need to be on the road for 10 or 12 hours a day in traffic in the rat race working for somebody else. I want that to be my legacy, to actually show them that you can create enough value to have your income replaced where you can do what you love, even if that means not making an income and doing your real passion, right? You have the real estate. You have that vehicle to deliver the true lifestyle of your dreams.
Very well said. That is very important.
And you're saying, like, even though you said we're not making a lot right now because we've gotten started, we still are enabling the lifestyle early where we can travel to another country for a month with our girls, and the girls can spend every day with you on holidays getting to know their dad, and he gets to know the ages and stages with the girls and things like that too. So it's not like we have to wait 10 years to go on vacation and see his kids and things like that. As soon as you start doing real estate, I see the result right away. You may not be making huge cash flows, but you're giving yourself a lot more time. We're going to go on holidays and we're cashing checks, and yet we're not in the country.
Yeah, and that's a great point too. And it is important, I think, still for people to realize that it is still a slow process in general. Like, you're not going to get rich next year.
No.
It's just not going to happen. If somebody tells you that it is, they're probably trying to get you for your money. Don't give it to them.
Those are lies.
Don't believe in those shows. I mean, they're great entertainment, but there's a lot that goes behind the scenes. And a lot of those are actually a job itself with flipping. So you guys are doing something really cool where you're creating the income so that you are not creating necessarily a second job, but you're creating that passive income.
Yeah. And it's like I said, don't underestimate. I mean, a lot of these shows, it's like you mentioned, I mean, they try to tell you, you know, do a couple of hours here and there in your free time and make tons of money coming in. And, you know, there are, hey, there are those home run deals that do come in. I don't want to set people up and tell people that this won't happen, but it is a business. Like, you know, every day I'm doing something to get ahead. I'm getting involved. We're involved, like with Jen setting up the website, with setting up lawyers, building our team. But it doesn't feel like work for me because I know where I'm going and I know what we've done and I know where this is going to go. So it just, some of the ingredients that I use, it takes a lot of ambition to do this. I mean, you have to be ambitious. You need a lot of determination. You have to be very, very determined because there are obstacles that come up. I mean, you are going to lose deals. There are going to be problems. I mean, thank God we haven't had them, but there are going to be problem tenants in your career, right? But if you have the unwavering persistence to get you through all of that, and if you keep focused ahead, if you keep focused on that end result of where you want to be, if, you know, we've talked about, as long as the why is big enough, those challenges in between, I always interpret them as, hey, they're there to make me stronger. When things happen, when you've got a bad day or something doesn't go the way you want, I always look at it and say, well, how can I go about that differently tomorrow and make sure that that same problem doesn't happen again? And I always interpret mistakes or any hardship as that's one more stepping stone to get me to the person where I need to be.
And that, it also makes a big difference doing this as a couple, though.
It does.
Where you have those bad days, you can't have those huge issues. And instead of going home and dealing with it all by yourself because your spouse doesn't want to talk about it or doesn't understand it, having a partner there that understands and you can unload to, and you both can brainstorm together and have discussions about how we're going to fix this or how we're going to get over this. You may have different whys. You're both in it. But the fact that you have that stable partner to come home to, that these problems, like Mike is saying, they're not real problems in life. These are just opportunities to work together over a challenge.
No, and that's grown us a lot as a couple, I find, because a lot of couples, they face challenges in a different way. But the way we face challenges, we look at it and say, okay, well, you know what? Hey, we've been through that. And then the next time there's a bigger challenge, it's like, hey, we've already hit this challenge. So this challenge doesn't seem as big. There's always a bigger problem out there. And as long as you can work together as a team, even if, you know, you're doing this single, find a partner, find, you know, a support group, find, you know, that's why we love the networking, because there's great, great people out there that you can build relationships with who, you know, you go there with a problem. It's like, hey, I've dealt with that. Come here. I'll show you how to deal with this problem. And all of a sudden it doesn't seem like that big of a problem anymore. Right. So
yeah. Networking is huge because you are able to ask, like you said, other investors, hey, have you had this situation happen? You're not alone. And in this industry too, once you get in, you realize it's not a whole cutthroat competition thing. It's how we can help each other and how other investors can work together. And it's a great community.
That was one of my barriers when I did stop myself from going to networking events. I thought that, hey, if I associate with these people, it's just going to be more competitors trying to get the same deals I'm going. What I realized at these events is that everybody's sort of got their own niche in the market. Everybody's in a certain area, a certain type of investing. There's so many different ways to go about doing this in this business that I found even if somebody is looking for the same deals or the same area you're looking in, I think people so focus so much more on abundance as there's enough for everybody versus, hey, I want to, you know, take your deal. Or if I tell my strategy, this person might take what I know or go after one of my deals. I don't see it that way at all. I see it as it's there's so much more to be gained by sharing your knowledge and your experiences than just keeping it all to yourself.
And I love networking because this was also a huge portion that got me on board with real estate, where if you only talk to one person all the time about real estate, you think they're crazy. And then all of a sudden you go to a networking event and you talk to all these different people and you're like, wow, maybe he's not as crazy as I thought he was. And also talking to people who have different experiences or different level of enthusiasm helped me relate, I think, a lot to other people. People who are a lot more chill or a lot just getting into themselves, I found I could relate to them and not feel as pressured to be as excited and talk about it all the time. So I loved real estate networking just because I found people at my own level that I could relate to differently.
And I found it a really humbling experience too. Like when I go there, I'll be honest, I always sort of pictured real estate investors and I was in a way intimidated at certain points because I always pictured a bunch of guys, middle-aged gray haired guys around the board table the way you would in a corporate setting. And I'd walk in there with a couple of properties as I was younger and I'd be like, how do I fit into this? And I'm not going to be able to relate to them. But what I found is everybody's in there for different reasons. And there's a very, very diverse group of people, different ages, different nationalities.
People just starting. People just starting, years,
literally flipping apartment buildings who own hundreds of doors. And I found it so engaging. Like a lot of people are very, very approachable, which I didn't realize. I didn't realize that people, you could actually call them. And they'd own so much more than you did. And they'd say, hey, call me. I'd love to discuss with you. And they'd share all of their information, their knowledge, which when I took Jen, it just opened up so many more doors. And it was a very, very humbling experience, I found. Just the way people were and to learn about their value systems that, yeah, you can make a pretty good income, but you still have the value system where it's not all about materials. It's about being with people, living more of a lifestyle, like giving more back to the community. And that's what I was really humbled by a lot of the people that I met at these events.
Yeah, me too. And it's also great to be able to make friendships and have outside meetings with, for example, us. Like we met, now we're hanging out, we're going to a wine tour. And it's nice to have people that have the same interest as you. You know, a lot of the friends that I had growing up, I can't talk to them about it. They're not as excited. So it is nice to be able to say, well, you're going to be the average of the five people you hang out the most with. And it's nice to have some common interests. And those networking events that I've been to have allowed me to meet a lot of those people that we started hanging out. And it's not that my friends prior are gone or anything, but it just allows you to have those different conversations. And if you're passionate about it, to be able to share that.
Well, I always like the fact that we stop being mom and dads for a night. I find as parents, you get so wrapped up in the parent world and you're so obsessed with the kids and you go out with your friends and that's all you want to do is talk about your kids. And it's wonderful. It's a super important part of your life. However, you don't want to lose who you are as a person. I think that's very common with parenting. So from being a stay-at-home mom, I love these opportunities where I can put like real pants on and like not wear the mom knot in the hair. And you can actually go out and have like adult conversations. I know we all parents talk about having adult conversations, but the wiggles get boring after a while. So I think it's something that you really need to do for yourself. And I think you really need to do that for yourself as a couple is step outside your parenting, be yourself again.
And one of the things I found interesting is that it, especially what you're saying, Sarah, that the people you hang out with the most, you really become like, if you want to grow into this, you know, we've all had great friends coming up and great families, but unfortunately, none of them were investors. None of them really had the mindset and were the people we want it to really become in the investment industry. So it's so important that if you want to grow, you need people that are going to encourage you, and you hang around people that are doing what you want to do. I mean, to flourish, you have to, for a seed to flourish, it has to be in the right environment. And that's very, very important. And for an example, when we first joined SoRight, we brought two properties after the second meeting, and then we went back there. And, you know, I'd never bought two properties in the same week. And so I kind of didn't know how to feel. And we sat down with Daniel, one of the founders there, and we're like, hey, you know what, I kind of don't know what to feel. I'm a little bit stressed. I'm a little bit nervous. How should I feel? And he's like, well, for example, we bought 10 properties in one weekend, right? So all of a sudden I'm like, oh, this doesn't seem so weird anymore, right? I mean, my family would have said, you're absolutely nuts, or you're greedy, or, you know, and people throw all these different things at you. So you go there and it's like, oh, it's not so normal. So you take a deep breath and it's like, how can I maybe buy more and see more of an opportunity the next time, right?
For
so
sure.
I found that when you're around the right people and listen to the right information, had we have done that sooner, there's a saying, you have to become before you can have. So you need to ask yourself who you need to be, and who you are now is really a collection of who you've grown up with, right? So you really have to become the right person to acquire the right amount of real estate and build the right business. And by becoming that, it's really what you let into your life. Either you typically only change when something comes into your life or something comes within. And when you're around all of these like-minded people and listening to the resources and getting all this information from them, you have a lot coming in. You really change as a person, and you're really able to grow into the person that you need to be, which is very, very important to us.
For sure. Well, thank you for the words of wisdom. We have one last piece of our podcast called the lightning round, mm-hmm. where I will ask each of you a series of questions. I'm going to ask Mike the question, and then I'll ask Jenna the question. You can say the same if you choose to have the same answer, or you can choose your own. You don't have to expand too much on it, but if you want to give us a few details to your answer, then feel free. So the first question of the lightning round is, what is your favorite real estate investing book?
I'd have to say it's Robert Kiyosaki, The ABCs of Real Estate, just because he's got such a way of just breaking it down in layman's terms where the average person can just understand it and really absorb it. So for me, that was the book that worked well for me for real estate.
I like anything by Tony Robbins. I find for me, it wasn't about the real estate. I needed to change my entire mind frame. And before I could do real estate, before I could support Mike in this 110%, I had to change the way I thought. And I found his books were really inspiring and didn't speak directly to real estate. So I needed that first.
So maybe a great option for somebody who's trying to get their significant other on board.
Exactly.
As well.
Don't go straight to real estate. It scares us away.
Okay. What about a favorite podcast?
I like Bigger Pockets, just because there's so many people on there that have acquired so much that you look at their strategies. And it's like I said, it's one of the things, you don't always need to be physically around people, but when you listen to this stuff all the time, you are surrounded by these people, and that's really helped me. And Breakthrough Real Estate is also a great one because it relates more to smaller investors that I'm more relatable to, and it's in Canada. So
yeah, both great ones. Jen?
My podcast is a little different. I really enjoy listening to Elevation Church. It's not real estate, but for me, it applies a lot to my mind frame of real estate. It keeps me really humble in the whole thing. I'm always afraid I'm going to be one of those people who are arrogant about how much we own, how much capital there is. And I think listening to something that keeps me true to who I am and to our family roots and our morals is very important.
That's great. It's great to hear that. What about your favorite pastime? So when you're not doing anything real estate related.
It's the same. We love to travel. My entire point is, I told Mike, I said, if we can't travel, I'm not doing real estate. If real estate comes before travel, it's not going to happen for me because I have to go away every year. I need to see the world.
What is the coolest place you traveled to?
Oh, God. Probably Africa. I lived for a couple months in Africa every year. I hand-raised orphan baboons out there. Those were my first children, for sure. Having human children, way easier than having baboon children, let me tell you. But like I said, by far, travel's a must.
Traveling's good because, I mean, at the average job, our goal is to travel more and more. And with, you know, Skype and with social technology, I can communicate with tenants really anywhere in the world with my phone, right? So there's a lot we can do. And when I'm traveling, I feel totally free, right? I mean, you're away from everything. You're in a totally different mindset. You're a different part of the world. And that's one of the big reasons why I do this, is so I can live the true life that I really desire. And, you know, have those euphoric minutes or moments when I'm with my family, when we're away from everything, we just feel completely ourselves. We feel completely free. That's what I love to do. And that's why we travel.
Amazing. What about you? Any cool place that you traveled to?
Oh my God, there's been so many. I think being in Santorini in Greece was cool. I mean, we're just there watching a sunset one day with all of these, I mean, there's been so many, but at the top of my head, we're just watching the sunset. I remember from people all around the world. And it was just an experience. There's no material involved. It was just really being around those people and just, you know, sharing the experience, even though a lot of people didn't speak English, just being in everybody's presence and just being caught up in that moment is really, really interesting for me.
Very cool. So if you lost all your money, all your assets tomorrow, how would you start again?
I'd really look at what it was that went wrong. I'd look at, okay, well, first of all, was I over leveraged? Was I being too greedy? You know, did I have the wrong tenants? Was there a market crash? And typically if you lose them, the one thing you can't lose though is your mind. I mean, once you understand that pathway, I mean, it takes what the average person till 65 until they can actually start realizing their retirement. But I look at what we've done now, the strategies can never be taken away from us. So I would simply maybe change my strategy after I found out what was wrong. But I'm so much more confident that we could bring it back because of our network, the team we've built, the people that are supporting us, and what we've learned. You can't take that away from us, right? So I wouldn't be terribly stressed out. I'd just say, heck, I'll get my feet back in and use real estate that's always been proven literally for centuries in this area and do it again.
I totally agree. It's like you're never going to do anything perfect the first time. Everything's a learning opportunity. You may succeed or you may fail. So whether it's you lose everything or you just have a small little blip, it's the same attitude as the, okay, I learned from that. Get back on the horse. How am I going to avoid that next time then?
And isn't it interesting? Yeah. Some of the most successful people in the world have lost or been through tremendous failures. And that's, for me, when I read about these biographies, it makes it that much more interesting because they've lost so much, but then they've gained so much. And it's like, well, what's the commonalities? These weren't people just going to work and working for a paycheck every day. No, these were people that actually knew how to build machines to make an income and build businesses, right? So it doesn't worry me so much in the sense that we all have failures. And typically once these people fall down, they're that much faster to get back up because they've been through these tough times. It builds a lot of grit. So
absolutely. That mindset and that grit and the drive.
It does, right?
Yeah. So how can listeners find you and where can they find you?
Like I said, so we have a new website. It's www.doubleeproperties.ca. We have all of our different properties on there. We have a little info about ourselves. We have some questions that people usually ask us. Also on there, there is our email address, which is doubleeproperties@gmail.com. If you guys have any questions or if you want to inquire about the properties coming up in August, September, or November.
Excellent. And any last words of advice for our listeners?
For us, you know what? It's as much as it's nice to build up equity, make passive streams of income, talk about real estate. We always get really excited about this sort of topic. It's really, at the end of the day, it's not about that. It's about living your dreams. It's about being who you are and living a lifestyle that you truly desire and having your right values in line. And I find as we do this, it's just really a method of transportation to get from where we are now to where we want to be. So I always say, don't focus so much on the money, focus on value, delivering value. And when you do that with people in your team, you do that with people in your network, you'll get the best results versus just saying, what can I take? Always ask yourself, what can I give? And money ultimately and success follows that, I think.
My biggest thing is support your spouse. Even if you think they're absolutely crazy, going off the rocker, I think you have to give 110% to your spouse because you'll be actually really surprised and how you come out of it at the end. And I think that's essential to be married and be a really strong partnership. Mm-hmm. And as much as I may not have agreed with Mike in the beginning, I promised him 110% of my energy, my efforts. And almost 4 years later, I'm actually really surprised of who I am coming out of the entire process.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much, both of you, for joining Where Should I Invest and being on the podcast. And I wish you the best of luck in your future investing.
And thank you for having us.
Thanks very much.
Thanks so much for listening to Where Should I Invest with your host, Sarah Larvey. Make sure to listen in next time. We'll catch you on the next episode of Where Should I Invest?